98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Big League Blast.
Chris Paul had himself a game last night. He was ruthless. His ball handling and passing were like magic in his prime. No point guard of his age has ever been better. Paul did so in the face of the league's newest MVP, picking apart the Nuggets, looking for matchups just to clown on the opponent, leaving a lot of damage in his wake. Now, since 1980, there have been just six playoff games with a stat line of 15 or more points, 15 or more assists, and zero turnovers, and Chris Paul has three of them, each in different decades, each for different teams. The stuff he does off the court is even more important than we realize. I was privy to some information last night at just how hard and how far Paul has gone to reach DeAndre Ayton. Paul even told a friend that Ayton was a player who had never been coached before. Think about that. There is also the priceless value he will bring to the team in Denver, where a young team could squander its advantage in the altitude of contentment and thinking that they have this one in the bag. Paul will simply not let that happen. He is not just a great basketball player. Chris Paul is an NBA legend. He is better than Steve Nash because he plays defense and he plays hurt. And while we have been blessed in Phoenix to watch some of the greatest point guards in history, this season might end up being his Mona Lisa and ours. All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW. Test drive the ultimate driving machine at the newly renovated Chapman BMW in Chandler at Chapman BMW on Camelback. Shop online at chapmanbmw.com.
Up front now with the basketball is Chris Paul for the Suns. Paul spreads out the Suns' offense. Now starts to move inside. Now wants to shoot a three. Suzanne! CP for three. 99-73, the Suns on top. Paul, 14 points, 15 assists. What a game. He shoots another three. Suzanne!
Yeah, that was in one 32-second stretch of the fourth quarter where Chris Paul just decided, I want the rest of the night off. I'm taking over. Whether it was setting up Torrey Craig for layups or hitting back-to-back threes, it's hard to put into words how good that man is at basketball. It's that rudimentary. You know the phrase that popped into my head? We love having Mark Schlereth on the show during football season. And a couple times a year, Mark will speak glowingly about a player and say, he's just a football playing Jesse.
Yeah. Okay.
Chris Paul is just a basketball playing Jesse.
He was so scary good and so ruthless in the fourth quarter that it really kind of, it was the emphasis on the game. Now, in retrospect, I thought Monty Williams got away with a couple of tactical decisions last night that maybe in a game that you weren't so fortunate you would have paid for. Number one, after DeAndre Ayton received his second personal foul, they let him stay out there for a while before Dario Saric could enter the game. And DeAndre Ayton did not pick up a foul, although at one point in time he reached as a defender on a Nuggets ball handler, and he had to be reminded to be smart. They went to some zone defense to protect him, and they got away with that. The other was near in the fourth quarter when Chris Paul was doing all this stuff that he was doing. I turned to Kellen Olsen and I said, they better get this man off the court. The last thing you want is him retweaking this thing right now. But that would, if you would have listened to me, that would have robbed those last two three-pointers from Chris Paul that really seemed to put an emphasis on the game.
Yes.
Or an exclamation point on the game. So the point is, this whole thing ended so beautifully last night, and the Suns seemed so strong and so fortified going forward that I think today is just a day of great satisfaction in the Valley. But I think going forward, what Chris Paul is going to do to this team in terms of what he says to them in the next X amount of hours before tip-off tomorrow night, it's going to be very important. Because if you were a young Suns player, you might not have any fear left for the Nuggets.
You might not. You're exactly right. Going back to the tactical things, DeAndre Ayton in the first quarter picked up his second foul at the 7:04 mark. And I know when it's that early in the game, you know, Monty, just like every other head coach, has his optimum patterns for playing time. and he's going to want to play DeAndre Ayton pretty much close to the full first quarter. There was a little antsiness there. At 7:04, the Suns were up 10-7 at that point. Actually, 10-6 at that point before Jokic made the two free throws. There was no panic. He left DeAndre Ayton in for 3 minutes and 4 seconds. He didn't come out until the 4-minute mark, which is still earlier than he has in recent postseason games.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought you hit on an important point. While he didn't yank DeAndre Ayton there, credit goes to DeAndre Ayton for not committing a silly third foul. Credit goes to Monty Williams and the coaching staff for, you know, a couple of possessions of zone to take the onus off of DeAndre Ayton defensively,
yeah,
and maybe that propensity or increase the chances of him picking up that third foul.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't pick up another foul for the entire game,
which
by the
is
way.
Remarkable to me. And the word that a lot of Nuggets fans, I guess, are saying is that was just derelict.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I think we were all bracing for a big parade to the free throw line in the first half from the Nuggets.
Happen.
They had two free throws in the first half.
Yeah.
And it was those two that Jokic hit after the Ayton second foul. And that goes to Mike Malone's point about did they quit? They didn't have any energy or any fire, and that was pretty evident.
Mm-hmm.
And you saw it in the second half where I thought it was strange, and I went back and I watched a lot of the telecast from TNT this morning before it came in. Reggie Miller pointed it out, and Reggie Miller, to me, seemed like he was rooting for Denver to get back in the game. Which was strange, but
okay.
There was a lot more straight line layups in the third and early fourth quarters by their starters. There was a little bit more in terms of aggression, but at that point, all the wind was out of the sails for Denver. It was way too little, way too late.
Yeah, I mean, that lead got to, 31 at one point in time?
Yes.
I mean, so at that point in time, it's really not even basketball anymore. It's just kind of, I don't know. Here's the thing about the Phoenix Suns, and I don't know whether you want to look at this as a cause for celebration or a cause for concern. They have not been locked up in any of these last 4 minutes of the game battles with teams. The games they're winning, pulling
just
away.
Outside of game two in the Lakers series, where that was a close game, it was a one-possession game, and it turned into a 3.5-minute affair, and they got pushed around in those 3.5 minutes. But other than that, you're right. They are taking care of business.
Yeah, and I suppose that's a real cause for celebration, but I think that they're going to have to do some heavy lifting now to make sure that they're not looking past this team, because we're all doing it. I mean, we're all guilty of it.
No, you only have to go back last year. And I know the circumstances were different. The Denver Nuggets in back-to-back playoff series last year were down 3-1. And they won both of those series to advance to the Western Conference Finals. There's still a lot of pride on that side.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still a lot of guys wearing that uniform that were on those teams last year. Yes, they weren't going up against a Phoenix crowd in the bubble last year, but they also didn't get the benefit of their home crowd in the bubble last year, and they're going to get a boost from that crowd. This thing is far from over, just like it was in the Lakers series, where we joked about, even in game six, you're up 29, you're just waiting to kill that villain from the horror movie. You can't fire a shot and then turn your back in relief, because they're going to come back, and the Lakers did just that. The Nuggets aren't done in this series. Chris Paul, the subject of the blast today, he talked about his fourth quarter and the team's fourth quarter performance.
Just filling the game out. I feel good. I feel really good. And, I missed some easy ones early or whatnot, but with the way that we play, the ball is going to find you. You know, we got so many great shooters on our team and guys that not only shoot it, they can put it on the floor. So, we just play the way we've been playing all season long, and that's as a team.
Yeah, and Chris Paul also spoke about what we talked about, the early foul trouble on DeAndre Ayton and how he navigated through it.
I think the best part of it was that D.A. got on our ass. He was mad. He was mad at us. And I loved it, because rightfully so. He was right. We got to protect him. We got to help him, you know, and it just shows the growth, not only in him, but our whole team. You know, there's so much onus on him night in and night out. We asking him to rebound. We asking him to screen. We asking him to roll. And, he just out there playing hard. And, you know, to see him bounce back from those two fouls and how the game that he did is great.
Yeah, it was another moment of maturity for DeAndre Ayton. 15 points, 10 rebounds. He obviously greatly impacted that game. While we're still on the subject of Chris Paul, and you asked Tim Bontemps in the last segment before the blast about the MVP vote. And let me preface this by saying Tim Bontemps is very connected. He does a great job of covering the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
He's the guy with the ballot. I'm the guy with the rooting interest. You have to consider all of these things.
Yeah.
But what he said about Chris Paul's place in the MVP pecking order really bothered me.
Yeah.
And I know it bothered some of our listeners, too.
Listen.
When there's that big of a reliance or a leaning on statistics, you are not fully grasping or defining what value is to a team.
Here's what I think happened is I refer to the people who didn't put him in the top five as idiots, and they're facing that shame. I think, with all due respect to Tim, who's a good dude and he's joined us, I think he's one of these guys. And so that long answer about value as he perceived it was, I think, him trying to rationalize that he didn't have Chris Paul in his top five. And again, I really don't understand. I get Joel Embiid. I get Nikola Jokic. But after that, you can't build a case for anybody that tops Chris Paul, in my opinion, after those two guys. And I'm not saying Chris Paul should have won it. I am not saying that.
No, our point yesterday was, how did 49 voters not find it necessary to put Chris Paul in the top five with his influence on a team that increased their win total that much and nearly had the best record in the league? And this is where it gets real frustrating for Suns fans, because it's this whole statistical catch-22. Devin Booker averages 27 points a game. Oh, he plays on a team. They don't win any games. He's got great numbers, but they don't. It's all about winning. Why is an all-star appearance about winning, but a most valuable player award is about statistics?
No, that's funny.
You can't have it both ways.
That's funny. Yeah, I didn't draw those two together. That's very, very ironic. Yeah, it's I just don't get it. I mean, this stuff has not happened by accident. I mentioned in the blast about being privy to some information about how Chris Paul has efforted to grow DeAndre Ayton, and it's fascinating to me. It basically involves a lot of pre-planning between Chris Paul and Monty Williams. Chris Paul has at times this season, as I was told, gotten to a level where he's been very frustrated with DA and said, this is a time when I'm going to have to jump his backside and hard, and Monty Williams has to give him a blessing. And then they do it, but they also know how to get out of it and how to teach in it, how to frame it, and how to support him afterwards. Uh-huh. It's fascinating. Do you know what kind of effort that takes to care that much about growing a teammate? I mean, you're a point guard on a basketball team that is going to the Hall of Fame. You don't need to do that. But he chooses to do that because that's what he does.
Not only that, I'm fascinated by that side of it. I'm fascinated by the DeAndre Ayton side of that as well. Mm-hmm. Doug Franz on our morning show in the last few weeks referred to DeAndre Ayton as the most coachable player in the history of the NBA. And that might be a little hyperbolic. I get it. But there's a lot
Doug?
There's a lot of truth to it as well.
No, I know.
Because the league's history is littered with high draft picks who came in thinking their you-know-what didn't stink, and they did it their way, and they were in and out of the league in four years.
Heartbeat.
So for DeAndre Ayton, a guy who, and I don't mean this as an insult, this is one of the things we love about him, he's got a lot of childlike qualities. But for him to be man enough to take that type of, this barrage of constant teaching and pointing out and correcting, it takes a special kind of dude to withstand that. And welcome more, and you're seeing the fruits of it.
I cannot agree with you more. It really speaks to DeAndre Ayton. And again, DeAndre Ayton, according to Chris Paul, looked to him like a player that had never received an honest day's coaching in his life.
And that's very possible with the way the system is set up right now with AAU and playing at these prep super teams and one year of college and different head coaches every year for your first 2 years in the NBA.
Uh-huh.
A lot of that was true. But when we talked about that, the potential of that tutelage back in November, Chris Paul is going to pay major dividends for DeAndre Ayton.
Mm.
Could you see it working out like this?
It's no. And again, in retrospect, it's the smartest plan James Jones could have ever uncorked to develop DeAndre Ayton. And I know it. And again, and I can be as hyperbolic as anybody, but I look at this and I've been.
I think you're the most hyperbolic person I've ever met,
and I'm guilty of that at times. Yes, I am. I'm going to cop to that.
I was only joking. I was trying to make a hyperbolic point.
When you that was well done, man. You are firing hot this week. When you look at this Kwame Brown story, if you've been paying attention to it or not, it's absolutely fascinating of what this young man is and where he's at and how he recalls his career and it just shows the damage that can be done to a young player if you brutalize him without any love, if you bully him without any support, without letting him know, I'm telling you this because I care for you, not I'm ripping into you because I don't want you here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to compare Kwame Brown to DeAndre Ayton, but they're at the other sides of the spectrum here. Who knows where DeAndre Ayton would be right now without Chris Paul? And I'm not trying to suggest that Chris Paul deserves too much of the credit for what DeAndre Ayton is, but this has been significant, and it is indeed in the end a credit to DeAndre Ayton for seeing this and going, okay, I'm gonna listen, and then last night for him to bark back at Chris Paul,
and you could hear the smile on Chris Paul's face when he was talking about it. I loved it.
Yeah, it's fabulous stuff.
And on the flip side of that, too, questions that don't seem all that relevant now, although they're more relevant than they were a couple months ago. Where would Kwame Brown have been
if he had a different situation? Kwame Brown was gifted Chris Paul.
Look, the difference in those two scenarios, and both guys were number one overall picks. One guy came out of college, one guy came out of high school. DeAndre Ayton, in my opinion, and this is without any inside information, he's received tough love this year.
Mm-hmm.
Kwame Brown just received the tough part.
Yeah. That's right. There was no other side of hard for Kwame. There was just hard.
So
that alone is so valuable to not only this season, but the future of this basketball franchise. It has helped them solve the conundrum of DeAndre Ayton. And that's just one piece of what Chris Paul has done this year. And I just don't get it. I just don't get it.
Devin Booker.
The fixation on numbers for MVP when valuable is in that, just like you said, and yet All-Star game, it's maddening.
Devin Booker did not stop gushing about Chris Paul last night.
I mean, I haven't seen it with my own eyes. With that, the name, somebody maybe Magic Johnson. So to be named with, a guy like Magic, and I know he passed Magic's assist record this year. It's just, that's legendary, man. That's forever. That's bigger than the game of basketball. That's an icon.
Here's a book on CP3 in the fourth quarter.
It's really the whole entire game. I think the fourth quarter he can kick it up a notch, but just his pace, his ability to, control the game, even when he's not scoring the ball. Obviously 15 assists, zero turnovers is unheard of, but for Chris Paul, it's a thing that he does. It makes it look normal. So just controlling the game from all aspects. And those fourth quarters are big for us. You come out and you put a team away like that, you get extra rest, which is, very important at this point in the season.
I'm not leaning on statistics or actual proof when I say this, but it's a feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Paul in the fourth quarter, whether it's a close game and the Suns need a big bucket, or whether it's a situation like it was last night where they're playing out the string and he's just putting a punctuation mm-hmm. on a ball game.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like he's not going to miss in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. No.
There's not many guys I've ever felt that way about in watching basketball for as long as I have. I just feel like it's always going in, and I'm surprised when it doesn't.
The clinic he put on ball handling last night was just sensational. That no-look pass to Dario for the dunk. Like I said earlier, that wasn't long ago when he couldn't get any zip on a pass mm-hmm. like that, going that way with his right shoulder. and he zipped it. I'm like, whoa. And then in the fourth quarter, when he started doing the Jedi mind tricks with the basketball and just had it on a string, and the defender was almost falling over, and then I forgot who he found cutting the lane.
It's Torrey Craig.
Torrey Craig.
Yeah.
That might have been peak crescendo of the game. Or maybe Chris Paul's last three. I don't know. But Chris Paul was feeling it at the end of last night's game.
He was. There's no doubt about it. And that play where Craig, I think that was, and I might have my facts wrong, there was a missed shot by Denver where Jokic thought he was fouled. And instead of stopping the ball and running back on defense, Jokic whined the entire way down the court, kind of walked back, and that allowed Chris Paul to find Torrey Craig for the layup. I think that was the sequence. And then Jokic just continued to complain at that point. He even looks like a frustrated player.
Mm-hmm.
And I know how good Nikola Jokic is.
Yeah.
But if you didn't have any knowledge of it, and you just watched games one and two,
mm-hmm.
and somebody told you, that's the MVP of the league right there,
would you believe
him?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't believe it. I just wouldn't.
Which means we know what's coming in Denver.
Yeah.
At least for game three.
Well, listen, this is the way this stuff plays out. It's when you go there on the road to zip, you come out in the first half and the Suns will go full on all out because they're going to see if the Nuggets are indeed cooked. And their reaction basically post Michael Malone, I think, is going to be very fascinating. You get to the second half, you realize if it's one of those days if the Nuggets finally have one of those runs and get their crowd into it, you've got a little leeway to rest guys, come back for game four. Uh-huh. You've just got to monitor this thing in real time to find yourself one victory in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and you know that blowout might be a blessing, you know, to get Denver back into the series.
Yeah,
one of the points people made after game one was, well, Jokic looked a little gassed in the second half. He didn't have to play very long last night.
No.
29 minutes and 34 seconds. That might be enough to recharge him a little bit as they head back to Denver. WWE SmackDown is coming back to Phoenix Suns Arena on August 20th. Tickets go on sale this Friday at 10 a.m., but you can win a pair right now by visiting the contest page at arizonasports.com. Coming up next, we'll visit with our Suns insider from arizonasports.com, Kellen Olson. It's Bickley and Murata live from the Ak Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station and the home of the Suns.
Home of the Suns.
We're checking in with Suns nerd Kellen Olson on the Bickley and Murata Show.
And now the Suns will walk it up with 14 seconds remaining in the game. What a night for the Suns and their fans here at the Suns Arena tonight as the Suns in command from the opening tip. And the final seconds tick away. And this one gives the Suns their second win in as many tries against Denver in this Western Conference semifinal series. The final score, the Suns 123, the Denver Nuggets 98.
Yeah, a cakewalk of a win in game two for the Suns. They lead 2-0 as the series shifts now to Denver for games 3 and 4 Friday and Sunday. Here to talk about the series with us, that production piece calls him Suns nerd. I say Suns insider, Kellen Olson, who joins us here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Kellen, how are you?
Doing well, Vince. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure having you on. I mean, there's so much to chew on from last night's game. We talked about an early potential swinging point in the series or in that game last night, and that was the second foul at the 7:04 mark of the first quarter picked up by DeAndre Ayton. I give credit to DeAndre Ayton and Monty Williams for kind of navigating through that. I'm wondering what Denver was doing and not attacking more. I mean, what were your thoughts on that early kind of pivotal moment?
Yeah, I think we're at this stage in the playoffs where we have to remind ourselves that there are 8 teams left, and we're talking about the best of the best in the league. So if you're not at a point in your just level of play at this stage of the season where you're able to look at that type of thing and exploit that consistently with your best player, with the MVP in the league, and that shows you're in serious trouble. I don't think it's indicative of, like, Jokic's level of play in the series or anything like that. I think it just comes down to execution. And the thing that really stood out to me early on in the game as well was how the Suns kept managing to create corner threes, because Michael Malone made a point post-game of game one, the first stat that he mentioned was the 7 of 13 threes for the Suns came in the corner. And then pre-game, he mentioned the same thing again. He brought up corner threes. And the way the Suns were continuing to generate those told me there was just a lack of execution from Denver. And it appears they've just hit a wall. They had a really rough moment, obviously, with Jamal Murray's injury. He is the heart of that team still. And for them to lose him and really respond the way that they did, I don't know about you guys, but I expected them to tumble down the standings once he went out, but they just kept chugging. Then they beat Portland, and we thought this was kind of their team, but I think we're just kind of seeing them hit a wall.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope you're right. All right, what do you think the power of the balance the Suns have been showing the last two games is for this basketball team? What is it doing to this group to get so many kind of signature performances along the way here?
Yeah, it's pretty immense because that's always been the identity of their team, is that they play together and they work harder than any other team. I think that was the thing that was going to be apparent with the Lakers series, especially with like LeBron teams and the way that they'll go through the motions from time to time in games, that the Lakers were not going to outwork the Suns in that series. That's not going to happen. Now, the Nuggets are an extremely hardworking team as well, but you even saw like in the second, third quarters of the game last night, it was just clear that the Suns were the more energized team and were the team that was wearing down the other. And that's just such a powerful thing when it comes across from really everyone up and down the team. You talk about all five starters being in double figures again. You go to the bench, Torrey Craig was excellent. Again, Dario Saric, it was great to see him looking like that. Cam Payne had a couple of nice drives. Cam Johnson made plays. Everyone contributed on the team in all aspects, and it's just such an overwhelming thing to see in a series like this, because there was kind of a moment where Will Barton got into the game and started making a bunch of plays for Denver, and you saw how much it helped them just to have another good, competent two-way player out there. The Suns have a bunch of those already. They're fine. So it's one of those things where you can just see the depth for the Suns as well up and down the roster just really helping them in the series.
Kellen Olsen, our guest here on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. We've spent a portion of today's show talking about at least the words of Michael Malone in terms of breaking down the series, motivating his team, calling them soft after game one, accusing them of quitting after game two. All that aside, I expect to see I expected to see it last night. We didn't see it, but I expect to see a much different looking Denver team. When you look ahead to game three, Kellen, what kind of adjustments could you see Michael Malone making?
I think for him, it comes down to how he can make the MVP look like the MVP again, because he hasn't looked like the MVP in these two games. He's looked like a good, very good player, but he hasn't been great in the series, and he certainly hasn't been at that MVP level. They tried certain things in game two that got him going a little bit more, but it's just going to have to be a better effort from them as a team. This wasn't the Suns like double-teaming him, swarming him, denying him the entire time. There were opportunities to get him the ball for him to get comfortable. He did somewhat, but not to the level that he should. And the thing that Suns fans should know well from Steve Nash's nights is that when the MVP award comes down in one of those games, there's an extra juice to the crowd.
Yeah,
and on
true.
Top of this being Denver's first game in this series at home, they're already going to be excited knowing they're down 2-0. But also Jokic getting it kind of turns into a celebration of sorts, and they're going to need that extra momentum, of course, with the way these two games went.
All right, judging by how you think the Nuggets might react, judging by what Michael Malone said after the game, what should the Suns, in your opinion, be focusing on to avoid any letdowns or that kind of thing?
Just not loosening up. I think that the thing that's become really clear in this series to me was that the advantages that the Nuggets had, particularly with their size and where we looked at them just being potentially wreaking havoc on the offensive glass, we just haven't really seen that because of the way this team is getting rebounded, the way that they've got out in transition and really just turned the offensive glass for Denver not really into a factor because of everything they're doing outside of that. I think that they're just wearing them down in all facets of the game, and if they're able to keep that pace at a certain level and then keep their motion going throughout this game and not let the game slow down, it's really going to benefit them. There was a really strange stat coming into the series, which was that both of these teams were bottom five in free throw rate coming into the series, and you just wondered, how is that going to affect this series? And it seems like what it's doing is making these games faster. There's less breaks, and I think that clearly benefits the Suns. So I think to that point again, the Suns have done a really good job, really all year, of defending physically but without fouling. And if the Nuggets are able to get like 10, 15 free throws in the first half, I think it could be a way different kind of game and series for them. But if the Suns continue not to foul, I think they're just going to continue to be in control.
Yeah, and what do you think? Do you think it was good for the room for Dario to come back and sort of get to bask in all that love and all that solid play last night?
Yeah, just the way that he was contributing on both ends of the floor. I think that one of the most important parts of this team this year has been when Chris Paul goes in with the reserves at the start of the second quarter. Usually it's around Dario, Cam, and both Cams right now. And that's a lineup that they've been recently using because Cam Payne playing with Chris Paul wasn't really a thing until the last month of the season. Dario and Cam Johnson had different stretches. They were either out of the rotation or injured. So seeing those guys all together, there's just a clear they just play really well together. It's really simple and cut and dry with the way the Cams move around the floor, with the way Dario has a feel for what Chris is going to do in pick and roll and such. There's just a rhythm and cohesion to their play that's very apparent. And I think that it's so easy for a player like Dario to thrive in there that you just had to keep putting him in there until he found that game. And then this could, of course, be a launching pad to him being a really impactful player for the next couple of days, weeks, however long this playoff run continues to go for the Suns, because that's a difference maker that they haven't had so far in the playoffs that they could still have.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Kellen, but you are headed to the Mile High City for games 3 and 4, correct?
I am indeed. Very excited.
When do you go?
Friday.
Nice. So the stellar coverage will be even more stellar with you on site for games 3 and 4, and hopefully hopefully talking about two more Suns wins on ArizonaSports.com.
Yeah, sorry, guys. I'm going to have to spend outside in 65-degree weather. I'm really just bummed,
you know,
this 110-degree turn coming this week.
I was going to thank you for coming on, but after that gratuitous
no,
shot.
No, but hold on. We know the hours Kellen puts into the job, and they're significant, so it's all good, brother.
Enjoy. Thanks, we'll be looking forward to the coverage from there.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. Kellen Olson, he covers the Suns for ArizonaSports.com, does a great job doing it, too. He joined us on the Coulter Automotive Group Sports Line. Coulter Nissan, west of the hassle. Visit CoulterNissan.com. Coming up next, the Nuggets may be down 0-2, but they do have something the Suns don't have, the league's MVP. Can the Quesarito get the Nuggets back in this series? We'll explore it next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
This is the home of Phoenix Suns playoff basketball. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station, and the Arizona Sports app. Suns playoff coverage presented by Four Peaks Kilt Lifter. Bickley and Murata talk Suns Nuggets now.
Yeah, this game reminded me of that Milwaukee Bucks game the other night where they're like, we just quit. This game is over. We're not going to compete. And it disappoints me because, man, there's nothing like the playoffs. Like the regular season, when you're in game 39 and you don't play four games in 5 days, game 52, 62. But when you get a day off in between, after you got your butt kicked in game one, you get MVP the day before, and then you come out and don't give any effort. That was that, like Shaq, you know, and I told Shaq, because Denver has some games where they came back in the second half, but that team tonight, they packed it in.
That was Charles Barkley last night on TNT talking about the Denver Nuggets, talking about Nikola Jokic, who hasn't received formally. He's the MVP, we all know it. I think that presentation will be tomorrow night in Denver for game 3, so he'll be able to celebrate that with Nuggets fans in an 0-2 hole. And that seems to be one of the debates going on right now. Michael Malone comes out and says, we quit tonight. We didn't play. He called it embarrassing. And for the second game in this series, Nikola Jokic was asked, do you agree with your head coach's assessment? Here's what he said.
I mean, I don't think so that the guys quit. When you're losing a lot, you can always kind of put your hand down. Maybe we put your hand up, put hand down, but head down. But I'm not sure that we quit. I didn't quit, so I can talk about myself.
Yeah, Tim Bontemps, when he was on from ESPN, kind of just you know, brushed that aside and said, that's the way Michael Malone does business. Yeah. Maybe the players are used to it. I don't follow the day-to-day ins and outs of the Denver Nuggets to you know, confirm whether or not it's the case. I just think that the language was so strong, it's going to have an effect on the team one way or the other. Either it's going to kick them in the butt or we're going to see more of the same.
Fire up the Michael Maloney montage again, Vinny. This is fascinating. For those who don't know the full extent of Michael Malone's takedown of his own team, the game after he called him soft, this is pretty enlightening.
Is it going to load for me here?
Maybe
not.
No, because I do agree with your point that this is not just typical maneuvering. This is about as full-on crazy as I've ever heard from a head coach.
Here we go.
I saw one team that wanted to be here and play with a purpose and urgency, and one team that did not want to be here. And there's a reason that their crowd is yelling Suns in four, and they're calling for a sweep, because if we play like this back in Denver, this is going to be a really quick series. It was, this was just an embarrassing performance all the way around from top to bottom. You know, literally, I saw guys say, I'm not making shots tonight. I'm just going to walk around and mope, and my body language is going to be poor. I felt we quit tonight. We had no juice, no energy, no passion, no fight, no urgency, no grit. Come up with whatever adjective you want to use. We did not have it. I guess for game three, I'm just going to try to find guys that will at least go out there and leave it all on the line. I may have a hard time coming up with five guys that fill that. We have a great crowd, but if we play like this, they're going to boo us off the court, and rightfully so. Disappointing, and that's an understatement. Play with no urgency, and that's why we got our ass kicked.
I hate every one of these guys.
That's just, I mean, it just, you expect it to stop at some point in time, and it doesn't.
Yeah, Mark Kistler wrote today in the Denver Post, well, alrighty then, the coach and the MVP are not on the same page. I'm not even sure they're reading from the same book.
Yeah, that's kind of, yeah. Yeah, so I don't know how they react to that. I mean, that isn't just your normal, that's just the head coach doing what he does.
We'll see. Jokic did take some responsibility. Now, he said he didn't quit. He certainly led the team in points and rebounding. But Kellen said something that we had said earlier in the show. If somebody told you, if you just watched these two games of the Denver Nuggets versus the Phoenix Suns, is Nikola Jokic the MVP of the league? You'd say no. He hasn't played that way. Jokic talked about needing to elevate to get his team back in it.
I think I need to be on top of my game every game, so it's not something that I can pick and choose. But I'm not going to be, or I think I need to be as a leader or whatever they call me. I think I need to be on top of my game every game.
And we'll see if he's at the top of the game. There will be the emotional lift. He's getting the trophy. He's in front of the home fans. It's going to be a packed house.
Uh-huh.
But I still, even though he was not at an MVP level, he wasn't the problem last night either. Nobody showed up to help him.
Yeah,
Will Barton, I thought, playing his first game, gave him good minutes. And apparently he was mad at Michael Malone for taking him out because he had reached his minute limitation. But he also admitted after the game, look, I'm a high risk guy right now. This thing could pop on me again. But he's out there playing hard, and he was a plus. But other than that, there was nothing. There was no contributions from Denver last night.
Yeah, no, I do agree with that. I think that one of the things that came to the fore after two games, especially with Chris Paul playing as well as he did, we talked about the inherent backcourt advantage the Phoenix Suns have if Chris Paul is healthy. We saw that in the second half last night. That you just can't get around that. The difference, but the quality of Phoenix's backcourt versus the quality of Denver's backcourt, it's canyon-esque.
Yeah, I looked at that from the top three guards in terms of playing time, because Barton was the best guard last night, even though he's more of a swing wing guy. But Campazzo, Rivers, and Morris against Booker, Paul, and Payne. The Phoenix trio outscored the Denver trio 42-12, had 12 more assists, 9 more rebounds, hit 3 more threes, and they shot over 50% at 15-for-29 from the floor, while that trio for Denver was 4-for-19.
See?
Yeah, if you're counting on Campazzo to play 10 to 12 minutes, you're going to get an effective backup point guard.
Yeah.
But when you're asking him to come in and play 29 minutes, He was not good last night.
No.
They got dominated, and that's exactly what the Suns need to do, is dominate that matchup, and they've done it so far.
And they did. And so, but again, it's I think there's a real danger here for Suns fans to assume this is over based on what we've seen so far. That is not necessarily the case. The series can turn. We saw how fast that Lakers series turned when Anthony Davis injured himself. Seeing how good the Suns have looked in the last five games, it's weird to realize that they were once on the ropes, given the status of Chris Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And since they were on the ropes, they've reeled off five in a row.
Uh-huh. And they're putting teams down fast and hard. Mm-hmm. Those last two games against the Lakers were just utter annihilations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, they had that stretch of annihilation in the first game, and they were up by as many as 31 in game mm-hmm. two. They're playing really well right now. Coming up next, we'll continue to look at Suns Nuggets through the scope of social studies with Sarah Cazell. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.